All right, it's official. You're in charge.
Shabbat shalom. I am thankful to be back again, and I'm always anxious, intimidated when I have to share space with Grant, but even this congregation, Beth Tikkun holds a very dear place to my heart. This is home. This is my foundation, and I feel the weight of sharing with God's people. I would like to share for a little bit today, and I'm going to pray again. I always like to pray before I begin a lesson, but I'd like to share a little bit today. If I have a title for it, it would be Lessons or Insights from the Shema. And my concern and the burden that I have, the passion, is how do we walk out? What does it look like when we walk out the Torah? What does that look like when we walk out God's oneness? And so I'd like to just share a little bit with you from the heart and with some of these insights. I'd like to pray again. Thank you, Father, again, for all of the prayers that have been lifted up today, and we're in full agreement. And I just want to sanctify myself again in this time, and this teaching, and may your kingdom be advanced because of what's said and done in this portion of the service. Hashem Yeshua. Amen. I wish today that all of the people that I know, God has blessed that I have communication and contact with I have many different friends in the Christian church and evangelical movement, and I have some that are not Christians. And I wish today that, and every day, that I could just bring every person that I know and that I have, that I'm in contact with, I wish that I could bring them all here. I think it would be wonderful. I think there are some who would have culture shock with some of what happens in attempting to understand. I can say that there are times when I share from the Torah, or even just when I share with someone that, I study the Torah. There's life and there's hope and strength in the Torah. People, there's a range of responses, from sympathy to those that really have a care for my soul. Then they want to warn me about legalism and all the whole range of things. But I have found that, and I'm finding even more and more, that people really need and want the light of Torah. But what does it look like, and how do we walk it out? How do we show that? The Torah does bring hope, peace, and protection, and its restoration. So how do we share those things more effectively? I think sometimes I get in the way, and I am in the way of the light that God has given in His Word shining. I think sometimes my words get in the way, and it's my desire. So these words are a challenge for me as well. But it's my desire to walk it out more and more, so that the world can see. Let us turn to Deuteronomy, Devarim, the 6th chapter, and the portion that this comes from is Vayetkanan, and this is when the context is when Moses and God's people were on the verge of entering into the promised land. The journeys, the effort, the up, the downs, the trials, they were culminating, and they were on the verge of crossing over. And Moses shared with them, I think, some incredibly powerful words. The words, as I understand it, in Deuteronomy 6:4, are the backbone, the foundation of the faith. And I think they cannot be understated. I want to read a little bit of a few of these verses, and then we'll start to unpack some of it. So Deuteronomy 6:1, and I'll be reading from the Comish. This is the commandment and decrees and the ordinances that Adonai your God commanded to teach you, to perform in the land which you are crossing, to possess it, so that you will fear Adonai your God, to observe all his decrees and commandments that I command you, you, your child, and your grandchild, all the days of your life, so that your days will be lengthened. You shall hearken, O Israel, and beware to perform, so that it will be good for you, and so that you will increase very much, as Adonai, the God of your forefathers, spoke for you. A land flowing with milk and honey. Verse 4. Hear, O Israel, Adonai is our God. Adonai is the one and only. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your resources. And these matters that I command you today shall be upon your heart. You shall teach them thoroughly to your children, and you shall speak of them while you sit in your home, when you walk on the way, when you retire, and when you arise. Bind them as a sign upon your arm, and let them be ornaments between your eyes, and write them on the doorposts of your house and upon your gates. Hear, O Israel, Shema Yisrael. I guess I'd like to start in verse 4, and we'll kind of work our way back. That word, Shema, it is used over 1,000 times in the Hebrew scriptures, and it is often sometimes translated as obey, Shema. And the definition that I have, it says to hear. Strong says to Shema is to hear intelligently, often with the implication of attention or obedience. Another definition says to hear, hearken, listen, obey. The essence, when you look at the first use of this word, which is found in the book of Genesis, the essence of the word is not just hearing or receiving sounds, but the response from what you've heard or what you've received. So Shema, hear. Not only is it about understanding the words or recognizing the words, but how do we respond in light of these words? And I think Moses, all of these things were running through his mind as he was pleading with God, asking for the opportunity to cross over and go into the promised land. And he wanted to experience that. And I think he began to reflect on the journeys and the ups and downs of the people. And but to me, I was struck with the question, why if they are getting ready to, if God's people are getting ready to go into the land of promise, and why this warning here, verse 1, the commandment, the decrees, the ordinances, why lead with that? Why start with that reminder? We find in the fifth chapter, and I would like for us to back up a little bit, in the fifth chapter and verse 22, we'll start at verse 17. You shall surely here we go. 5:19. This is after Moses is recounting after the Torah was given, and he's relaying to the people what that experience was like. And I'll pick up at 19. It says, these words Adonai spoke to the entire congregation on the mountain from the midst of the fire, the cloud, the thick cloud, a great voice, never to be repeated. And he inscribed them on the two stone tablets that he gave to me. Verse 20, it happened that when you heard the voice from the midst of the darkness and the mountain was burning in fire, that all the heads of your tribes and your elders approached me. You said, behold, Adonai our God has shown us his glory and greatness, and we have heard his voice from the midst of the fire. This day we saw that Adonai will speak to us, and a person will speak to a person, and he can live. But now, why should we die when this great fire consumes us? If we continue to hear the voice of Adonai our God any longer, we will die. For is there any human that has heard the voice of the living God speaking from the midst of the fire as we have and lived? This to me, there are a whole lot of great contradictions, perhaps. There are questions that arise from the context of the giving of God's instruction. So these people were, quote, saved. They were redeemed. They had already left Egypt. They were on the cusp of the promised land, and they are being reminded of when God first gave the Torah and the instruction. I think there is something for us to pay attention to right here, where after God had spoken, and God's purpose was always to have an intimate relationship with his people. And after he'd spoken, the response of the people as a whole was, Moses, you go hear from God. You stand next to him. You get close to him. You understand what he wants. And then you tell us, because we don't want to die. We don't want to be consumed. And so I thought in considering this, why did God present himself? And I'll open this up to you. Why did God reveal himself to the people in such a terrible way? Lightning, thunder, fire, smoke. Why would he do that? If he wants a relationship and he wants intimacy, why would he take this approach? And I'd love to hear some thoughts. I have those, but I think if I was wanting to build an intimate connection, stay with me. We're talking about what it looks like to live out the instruction, the Torah. But if I wanted to connect with people, I can think of some different ways to do that than thunder and lightning. But I'd love to hear from you. Why would God take that approach? Go right ahead. To get their attention. I think he had their attention. There was another one. Okay, to get their attention, and now and then what?
So that they can see the power and the greatness of our great God.
Okay, get their attention. So that the people could see the power and the greatness of our God. Yes.
Well, I think even beyond that, the concept that this is something you should, you might do, this is something you have to do to have that relationship. This is God's standard being set up, so there's no other way. When I talk to someone, I talk to my kids about, I can talk about, why don't you do this? But he's saying, this is it. He's showing himself that this is serious.
All right, now I like where we're going, but they were already redeemed. They after the blood was applied to the story of Passover to the doorposts and they left Egypt. They were delivered. They were redeemed. They were his people. And so to present himself this way, I could think, what if there was a choir, a nice choir, the choir that heralded the birth of Yeshua? If for the first time, what if that choir had been there? And what if the things that we see described in Revelation, the streets of gold, what if that had been the presentation? I think I may have liked that. Go right in the back.
To have a proper relationship, you have to understand the positional authority between the two individuals.
Understanding the position of authority. Now, I can tell you so far, I agree, but I can tell you so far, if I were just being introduced to this, I wouldn't be excited. I know we've heard coming from some of our backgrounds In Hebrews, I think the 12th chapter, in referring to this, has often been misused to say, oh, we have not come to this mountain that burned, that quaked and that burned with fire and the thunder. We don't, but we have come unto Mount Zion. As we have something better than this approach. You see, this idea and that misinterpretation exists. But God chose this presentation for a reason, for all of the reasons that you mentioned. I want to say this as I was reading it, because not only did God show up in a way that was frightening and terrible and thunderous. By the way, look at Moses' response when all of this was going on. But not only did God show up like that, then he shared his commandments, decrees, ordinances, statutes. Wow. I as a boy, and when I think of these ordinances, decrees, again, we're talking about how do we walk out? What does it look like to walk out the Torah? My father was, he was a pastor. Both my parents are deceased. He was a pastor, and so I was in the chapel every time the doors opened, 4 or 5 days a week, we were in there. And Dad was a former military, and I think some of those things never fully left his system. And so the household that I grew up in was very strict discipline. I didn't grow up in Ohio, grew up in the South Florida. And here were some of the norms for my house. Bedtime, you went to your room at 8 o'clock, lights out 8:30. No changing in that. That's just how it was. And my father was the kind of, I wish everybody could have met him, but he was the kind of man, especially in our home, we knew what Dad said went. It settled every question, if Dad said it, that's just how it was. So bedtime in your room, 8 o'clock, lights out 8:30, that's just how it was. Chores, that's just how it was. All of those, as I think about some of the things, to respect for elders, our parents felt so strongly about that. That I was required, and it wasn't until I moved up north that my response to adults was always yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. We couldn't get away with anything else. To talk back, to say I don't want to, I don't feel, it wouldn't happen. My father had he was just ironclad on those things. And I thought, I remember thinking sometimes in frustration, he gathered joy from being able to say, go to bed, it's bedtime now, it's 8 o'clock. And maybe he did have some joy when we were, the thought that we would all be going to bed, but it seemed like he really got a kick out of that. And I remember thinking, something's wrong. I go, for anybody to enjoy their children have to get up early. They have to do chores. They have to go to school. They have to do their homework. And I remember thinking when I'm an adult, when I have children, I'll have more understanding. But it wasn't until my adulthood that many of the rules, and I shared just a few, but many of the expectations that my father had, I began to understand them. I can tell you that as I stand here today, the respect that I learned as a child, all of the frustration that went into that process has paid dividends for me in great ways. You see, this connection, when God gave the ordinances, the decrees, the commandments, the statutes, here is something that is very easy for us to miss. Not only that, when he speaks, when God moves in our lives in a way that is powerful and we have to tremble, we have to stand in awe and reverence. Sometimes we can say that or feel, we're tempted to feel like I want a more loving God. I want a more gracious God. But the commandments are grace. The instruction is grace. The rules, the boundaries are hope. They are a protection. And so I think all of these things were running through Moses' mind and through his heart. The people didn't really get it. They don't really understand. They didn't want to have that connection with God. And so he said, the warning comes, Shema, hear. God didn't want them to just follow rules, commandments, ordinance, statutes, woodenly or blindly. He wanted them to understand the heart that comes behind it. And so the cry comes out, Shema. I think if God today would speak, and if we could hear, this is what he's saying to his people. Shema, hear this. Not receive the sounds of some speaker or teacher, but get the depth. Understand the purpose, the heart behind the commandments. You know, I think that there are people who, and not understanding God's commandments, denominations come up with rules and ordinances in a desire to be holy, in a desire to do what's right. They come up with their own protections and not understanding the heart behind what God has already given. I ask, and it is my prayer, my heart's desire, that I would be one to walk out what it looks like when we hear, when we Shema, that our God is, he's one. He's Echad. And I want to talk about that for a little bit. I love that word, Echad. Shema, hear, O Israel. What does it look like to be one? In this text, again, where I just read in the fifth chapter in verse 22. I want to read that again. But now, why should we die when this great fire consumes us? If we continue to hear the voice of Adonai our God any longer, we will die. For is there any human that has heard the voice of the living God speaking from the midst of the fire as we have and lived? And so we see in this passage that there was fire, there was cloud, smoke, lightning, and I want to look at those contrasts, because those are two things that don't seem to go well together, the fire and the cloud. And so let's think of this in the natural. Fire, by its essence and its nature, it provides light, it provides heat, it provides warmth. But it can burn. I think about the sun. The sun is, we could not live without it. But all of the wonderful things that the sun does, it can also be dangerous. I remember as a boy, the first time I realized that the sun, with a magnifying glass, that you could, I don't want to teach any bad habits here, but you could burn an ant. I watched someone take a magnifying glass I apologize. I catch an ant on fire, and I remember wondering. Yeah, this is why kids shouldn't hear some of these things. But I remember wondering, how could an ant burn up just from the sun and a magnifying glass? And I wondered what it would feel like on my skin. It's just the sun, and it's just a little magnifying glass. I can tell you, it is very intense, and it's dangerous. Don't try that at home. But the fire. God led his people with a pillar of fire, and so when he came down on the mountain, one of the ways he manifested himself was with the fire. Light, warmth, heat, but it could also burn and consume. At the same time, blended was the cloud. The clouds almost do the opposite. Cloud can protect. It veils, it obscures the sun. The clouds bring protection from the kind of the blazing heat. And even if you look at, for example, these lights, that's fire. Every single one of these lights, there's fire there. And as a matter of fact, they could not be used in this way if there was not a glow or something to obscure the intensity that makes it safer. So as I look at this, as I look at God's presence on that mountain, there were two opposite manifestations of himself. The cloud, which protects, which veils, which obscures, and the fire, which gives light, which provides warmth. And so these two opposite things working together is how God revealed himself. What does it look like when we as God people, Shema, or hear not just the sounds, but really respond appropriately, that God, when he's moving, and it sometimes looked like opposites, is really one. What does it look like when we walk that out? And you see, I believe that was the passion that was on Moses' heart. The people didn't really get it. They still wanted a distance. They wanted someone between them and God. He says, as we read on in the passage, he said, "Oh, that this people had a heart to know me." The cry goes out, "Shema, Shema, Israel, Israel, the Lord our God, he is one." This presence in our lives that reveals is the same presence that veils. Let me say it this way. I'll ask a question to you. Is God near and present right now, right here, or is he far away?
Yes.
You don't know Grant. Yes. I remember I've had some interesting journeys, and for years I pastored a congregation in Akron Sunday Church. And I remember one occasion, there are things that just stick out with you. As an illustration for, I was so inspired and excited and happy. And as an illustration, as a part of my lesson, I shared the song, a Bette Midler song, "From a Distance." And I've always kind of liked that song. And I wanted to share the two contrasts, that God is near, he's present. And that he seems far, he can be far. And so I played that song, and she sings it so powerfully and well. What distance? And she described all of those things. And the chorus is, "God is watching us. God is watching us from a distance." After the service, and I thought I presented a good balance well, a minister came up to me and he said, "Your message was off." And he said, I love this guy. We're good friends. So it's good when you have friends that can talk this way. He said, "God is not distant. He is a very present help." And maybe that's your experience, that he is distant and that he is far and that he's veiled. But that's not mine. I used to think like that. I used to believe that. But he shared verses with me, and I did in my lesson. I did share verses about God being there, but he wanted to let me know that in his experience and in his walk, God is right there, and that's the message I needed to tell everybody. And I agreed with him, but I began to think about this, and see, what does it look like when you walk it out? I can tell you that when my father was on his deathbed, my youngest brother was 2 years old. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, hear, understand that God, our God, is one. The things that appear to be polar opposites, as we really shema or understand, as we begin to yada or know, connect with God in an intimate way, he is one. And may it is my hope today that these feeble words can encourage and challenge us to walk it out. Because yes, he is a present help. But here's why I had to share that. When my father was on his deathbed, my youngest brother was 2 years old, and the faith community that we were a part of gathered around, and people rallied, prayer and fasting and support that God would heal him. I remember one of the elders saying a few days before he passed away, no one knew for certain that would happen, but an elder told our family, my mother and my siblings, that the Lord is not going to take your father, that he is valuable to the work and his call and his role, and the Lord is going to heal him. And I myself recall looking at and wondering, how would God take the sole provider of our home from us when my younger brother is just 2 years old? How would he do this? It happened. And I can tell you, God felt distant. Maybe you can say like my friend did, that no, my experience is that he's always there. Your answer was right, by the way, when you said yes, because he is always there. But I can also tell you there are times where we experience the cloud, where his presence is veiled. His purposes, his will, they are veiled. But the more we understand that it is the same God, that he is one, that he is echad, there is a peace. You follow? And what does it look like when we live out God's oneness? Marriage. The hero Israel, Shema Yisrael, Father, help us as your people that we can walk it out. Not talk about it. Not carry banners and signs about it, but live it out. Because the world needs it now more than ever. Should we be alarmed? Should we be up in arms and worry at the unrest in our society and the polarization? I'm not a very old man, but I can't, as I have looked at history, I can't imagine a time where our nation, perhaps during the Civil War, I wasn't there, but as I look at history, where our nation was more polarized than it is now. And the people of faith, my heart bleeds when I see some of the things that we post and some of the responses that we have. Are we walking out to the world the understanding that our God is one? He is in control. He sets up kings and takes them down. See, there is a peace that comes when we Shema. These people were alarmed at the fire and God's people, the redeemed, and the smoke and the thunder. They were alarmed. Some of them were put off, perhaps, by the commandments and those things, but not Moses. That's the heart I want to have. He would draw near. He was able to walk out, regardless of the things, and Moses was human, but regardless of the fiery serpents, regardless of the need for water, there's no accounting of Moses throwing up his hands to God and saying, I'm about to die, I need water. Because he understood that our God is Echad. He's one. He's one. He is water. And so, but marriage, following this principle, Shema Yisrael, Lord help us. The idea, the two becoming one, I think there is hardly anything more beautiful than watching a newly married, a young couple, young love. It's incredible. Can hardly, they're always sitting under one another and can hardly keep their hands off of each other. There are times I'm having a conversation with a young couple, newly married couple, and they will start a conversation sometimes as if I'm not there, right in each other's, you know, it's that young love thing is special and precious. And but I'm beginning to think there's nothing more special and precious than people that have sustained the ups, the downs, the hard places of life, and are still together. And this is in the Torah, I believe is Genesis, the third chapter, maybe five, but it's where it says, for this cause shall a man leave his mother and father, and the two shall be one. This is what an incredible and a powerful illustration. I want to say this in my own experience. May God help us to walk it out. I want to walk it out more and better. Recently, with my employer, this wasn't the first time, but I took the DISC test, the DISC profile. They do your personality, all of those things. And this is, again, not my first time doing it. But the facilitator, the one who was doing that, my wife said, "Hey, I'd like to do it too." So I talked to him, and he allowed her to take this test, personality test. And when after we, all the results were in, and the facilitator told me, looking at my wife's results and looking at mine, he said, "Just looking at those things, I wonder what goes on in the Hargrave household." My wife, I didn't know this when we were newly, deeply in love. We've been married for 20 years, and I wish she could have been here today, and she does as well. But when the early parts of that, when she could do nothing wrong, and I could do nothing wrong, I had no idea that personality-wise, we were polar opposites. The way both of us approach problem solving, polar opposites. And it only took the first day of our honeymoon for me to realize that there might be a problem here. And each successive day of our marriage, that became more and more evident. And let me say this as an aside. I am a licensed social worker and work in the mental health field. And so I have a social work license. My wife is a licensed clinical counselor. So she has that. We approach problems from two totally different arenas, two different licenses. And we've had to learn and are learning about Echad. Because without it, like I said, it didn't take long for some things to happen that did not make sense to me. It'd be something simple. And she'd start to share, oh, this is what we ought to do. And to me, it was just so obvious that was wrong. That's not the way we should do it. I'm thinking of examples. And I know we're family. I don't want to share it, but I can share this one. But Echad, it is one. What does it look like for the world to see? I think sometimes, especially in among the people of faith, there are couples, and you all know, there's the time. I don't want to get off track, but I want to challenge us. What does it look like when we shema, when we hear, not just the written word, not just what a teacher is sharing, but when we hear, meaning I receive the sound, but I also have the appropriate response. When we shema that our God is Echad, what does that look like? So we had not been married too terribly long, and I have always, my father, I told you he was rigid. He put this in us. He put this in me. So when you brush your teeth, they're on the toothpaste, it says on the bottom of it, it says squeeze tube from bottom and flatten as you go up. Every tube pretty much says that. And I've done it all my life. That's the way we were trained. And so after we've been married a little while, and I noticed it first on the honeymoon, when my wife, when I went to get the toothpaste, it was just squeezed in the middle. Now that's nothing to get upset about, right? So I just squeeze it from the bottom. We're in love. Life is good. I go back again, and it's squeezed in the middle. But I'm an adult, and I'm in love, and that's trivial. So I just squeeze it from the bottom and fix it. Don't even mention it to her. But after it kept happening, I thought, well, maybe just a little simple awareness, and this will be, you know. And so I shared it with her. It says squeeze tube from the bottom, flatten as you go up, and I explained it to her. And her response right away was just wrong. Her facial expression first was, what's the big deal? It's toothpaste. I hope you're laughing with me. This is a real. So this is what I did, because it's trivial and it's just toothpaste. I bought her own tube. I hope that was with me. But a funny thing happened. Guess what happened to my tube? I'd find it squeezed in the middle. I have observed, and yes, we got over that. It's worked out. I don't mind when it's squeezed in the middle now. As a matter of fact, my wife bought one of those little things that you put on there where you can only squeeze. So it's good. Life is good. But here's what I want you to know. I have seen couples, and you have too, where, I'll ask a rhetorical question. When a couple is, you're being introduced to a married couple, or they're interacting in public, who should be the most vocal? If decisions are being made publicly regarding a household and what should happen and how it should be done, there's husband and wife there, who should be the most vocal? Is anybody going to touch that?
Yes.
Oh, who said yes? Let's say that again.
Whoever speaks better.
There we go, whoever speaks better. All right, so you've seen these couples. Maybe the wife speaks better, and so she's saying, oh, we're going to do this, and we should do this. And the husband, you can see by his facial expressions, that's not exactly what he's thinking. Shema Yisrael, For this cause shall a man leave his mother and father, and the two shall be echad. What is that supposed to look like? Well, because of my conditioning, I kind of knew what that was supposed to look like. Who's the head of the house, man? No, I'm sorry. I'm not going to pull you into that. Unless you say, I hope you all said God. But again, you know what that's supposed to look like. It's harmony. It's together. But there, you've seen those couples where it seems like the woman is in front of the man and overspeaking and well, let's talk about it later. Oh, no, honey, we're going to do, well, let's just think about it. No, this is what we ought to do. And he's being gracious and like, I wonder what goes in that household, kind of a thing. And then there are those couples where someone has learned, either the man, the husband, or the wife, I've seen it both ways, just be quiet and let them do their thing. Brothers and sisters, that is not echad. What does it look like when we walk it out? Because we are different. God gave us those differences. He created male and female. He didn't create them that way so that we could mimic each other. What does it look like when the world sees an example of a husband and wife that are very different temperaments, very different attitudes, but a God? And this is what I think was on the heart of Moses when he said, Shema Yisrael, Lord, help us to walk it out. The cause of marriage. And there are so many people that protest. And, oh, I'm glad we have a leader that can get marriage right. Or I'm glad we, and they have all of those wonderful things. Let me tell you what's going to get marriage right. When people see husbands and wives that love each other and that are different and learn how to walk through and work through real life struggles, that's what will strengthen marriage. This idea, you know, who's my opinion? Hollywood has hijacked and sabotaged what marriage should look like. And all of these flowery, perfect ideas and all of that. And you can get up first thing in the morning and kiss and you haven't brushed your teeth. All of that stuff. It's not real. It's okay to say, honey, let's freshen up first. And the world needs to understand it. We are setting people up for an ideal that, oh, God is so loving. He's full of grace. Is God loving?
Yes.
Is he full of grace?
Yes.
Does God exercise wrath?
Yes.
Is he a God of judgment?
Yes.
And we set people up when, oh, I'm sorry, I don't want to be preachy. I want to be like Grant. I mean, if I sit down, it'll help. No, I mean, I'm sorry. I don't mean that. You're not helping. I think about my daughters. I have three daughters and a son. I want them to have a marriage that stands the test of time. So do me a favor. If there are some real places in your own experience, you want to protect the young people and the young children here, do them a favor. Let them understand the real places of life that we see things different and operate differently, but are stronger because of it. You know what I'm sad to say? Sad to say, the last four or five years, we're beginning to learn now. I don't do it perfectly. No, I need more. The Lord knows I need it more. We are beginning to learn how to walk it out. Not tolerate those differences. Well, that's what our politically correct society is teaching. Oh, learn tolerance. Learn. I am better off, not when I tolerate my wife's differences, when I understand the heart of where she's coming from and how those things benefit our marriage. That is echad. And that is who our God is. the more we understand it. And here's what, this is what Moses is saying. Shema Yisrael, hear this. I think this is what God is saying. Understand that I am one. Then love me with all of your heart, all of your might, and all of your resources. I want to be an example of what that looks like when you walk it out. You want to show the world. It is an awakening that is needed. As I'm closing, I'm going to sit down. I can tell you, I remember as a boy being in our backyard, and I loved my father, and I knew that he loved me and loved us. And the first time that in having conversations with my father, he was a basketball player, but he could never dunk a basketball. And so there was a time when I could, and I wanted to show him. Remember the first time? Dad, he was always busy. Dad, I want you to come see. I want you to come see me. And so he was watching him, and I was able to do that. And afterward, I'll never forget this. And I was just beaming with joy for him. And he said, "Boy, I wish your grandfather could have seen you. He really would have taken to you." And I remember at that time feeling and getting a sense of kind of that surreal, that I hope one day I wouldn't say that to my children. But let me say this. If I could sit down with him today, he passed away in 91, I was 20 years old then, and if I could sit down with him today, just have a small chat, I'd thank him for every punishment. My father believed in corporal punishment. I thank him for requiring that I be disciplined. I thank him for teaching me respect. But you know the funny thing? Of my siblings, I was the one who resisted his instruction, his boundaries, the most. I was the one that challenged the most. I caused my father great grief. There are times people in the congregation would come to him about me. "Your son is asking questions in Sunday school and pointing out contradictions instead of just taking what we're teaching." And he'd tell me, "Son, but if I could," but it's taken. As life has gone on, I understand the heart that he shared each of those rules with. What if I could have gotten it when I was 7 or 10? But fast forward to this lesson. I think it's very often late in our walk with God that we begin to understand. You say he's right there when we're going through this place. God, why would you allow this person that I love dearly to die? Why is it that couples that are godly try to have children and cannot? And here, people out of wedlock with multiple children from different men can have children just at the start. How does that happen if you're right here, if you care? But then I think about the patriarchs and the wives of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Their wives had difficulty conceiving. How is that? If God is so near, if he cares, Why wouldn't he? See, but it's not until as we continue to walk that it becomes clearer. Shema. So in your own life, there are places where the fire gets hot and things are being burned and purged in you. There are times when it feels good. It's warm. This is the day. There are those times. Then there are those moments where I don't understand. Remember, he's one. Remember, he's the God that gives and takes away.
Amen.
And we can say, bless it, but it takes time to get there. And so it is my desire and prayer. Number one, please pray for me. I think an email kind of went out to you regarding a ministry that God has opened up. And it's my desire to just walk it out. There are some incredible things, good things that God has done. There's also, I can tell you this, without God's continued blessing and work, I don't know what will happen. But I want to be an example of the believers. I want to shine the light of Torah. I believe that there is hope, life, strength, and peace in Torah. But what does it look like when you walk it out? That's what I want to show the world. This is what I encourage you to do. And the best way to do it is not just, oh, grace, 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 love. Wrath, rules, commandments, the mitzvot, not just, he is a God. And when we have the context of it. Thank you for the courtesy of your attention. Can I close with prayer? I don't know what else we'll do here, but I'd just like to pray. Father, thank you so much for this place of repair for Beth Tikkun. Thank you for every family here. Thank you for the work that you have called us to. I ask that we as a people, individually and collectively, would shema, would hear, and that our lives will reflect that you are one. I pray that at a time where there are some earthquakes going on politically, there is thunder, there are lightnings, there are storms, but I pray that we would reflect to the world that there is peace. That our God, our Messiah, is for all people. The promise to Abraham that was that all nations of the world would be blessed. Father, forgive us for when we get caught up in polarized discussions and conversations and positions. Because our God, our Messiah, was given to bless all nations. Help us to walk that out. And when we see the differences, the storm, the fire, the trials, the testing, when our understanding is stretched to the limit and we experience the cloud, the veil, help us to walk out and reflect that it's going to be all right because our God is one. We ask these blessings in Yeshua's name. Amen. Thank you for your
time. You know, I think in the opposites, we also see a menorah.
Light.